Okay, it's September 11th. Actually, this is what they call it, 9/11 Day. This is the day that the Twin Towers came down. And a lot of controversy over it. Some people say it was an inside job. Some people say, well, no, but the government was aware of it. Other people say, no, strictly a surprise. I don't know. I'm not privy to any of that information. I just know they came down. Lots of people were killed. And it was used as a pretext to go to war against Iraq.
Right. Bring in the Patriot Act,
yeah,
which has hampered more freedom. And should have served as a warning not to have whoever planned it or what. Muslims drove the planes.
Yeah.
So it's ought to serve a warning not to have Muslims coming into the country.
Right. Yeah.
And yet here they come more and more. And
we're supposed to be like a free and open, tolerant country that does not discriminate against people's religious faith, that all religious faiths of the world are welcome to come to our shores to partake of the American dream. Does that make you feel good and fuzzy inside?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's ridiculous if, you know, for the average person, if you know specifically that there's a certain family down the street and members of that family keep breaking into your house and abusing you or your kids or whatever, why would you let that family keep coming into your house?
Right.
And that's the same thing on a grander scale with the Muslims.
Yeah.
Why would you let them keep coming into this country? And a lot of people don't want them coming into this country.
But, and the thing is, regardless whether it be Muslims or people who are not Muslim, when you change the base of the nation, in other words, the foundation of the nation, the foundational people in this case, then the country will change.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's done through peaceful means, people might say, well, there are peaceful Muslims. Well, even if they are peaceful Muslims, they will still change America.
Right.
And if we love America, if we love the ideals and the heritage and the old America we still think about, you know, if we love those things, why would we want to change it?
Right.
And yet there's people who do want to change it. And because they really hate America.
Mm-hmm.
They hate this old, what they call the white power structure and the Christian foundation of America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, and plus, you know, it also serves as a, you know, a way to reduce wages, and it serves as a way to, you know, basically there's these elitists, and they want to retain their power, and they, you know, they know the best way to do it is to basically knock out Western Christian civilization, which has always kind of stood as the bulwark against tyranny. And then they can just have a worldwide drone class of workers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're not saying workers as in, you know,
the blue-collar worker people.
Yeah,
we're
bosses.
We're talking workers like slaves.
Yeah, the bosses versus the worker type thing. But we're talking about, you know, it doesn't matter if you're a white-collar worker or a blue-collar worker. It's, you know, anybody can learn to run a computer. You know, it's,
yeah, and the thing is, there's a difference between workers who are working at their free will, chasing the American dream, building a strong family, maybe the dream of someday saving enough money, start their own business.
Right.
You know, and various other dreams, aspirations they may have. And then people that are confined to a slot.
Right.
And that's where they're at throughout their life.
Yeah.
And that's the difference that we're making a comment on. And so this argument we hear all the time, well, there are peaceful Muslims. That doesn't matter.
Right.
If the culture's changed, if everything we love about America has changed, then America is no longer what we have experienced, the American experience is gone.
Well, you know, and I think that's, you know, something that a lot of people are recognizing. And,
well, that's the reason why they had the our immigration policy was crafted along the structure, along the way lines that only a certain percentage of people could come to this country based upon the current percentage of those same people in this country, whether it be Japanese, Chinese, Africans, whatever the case may be, they wanted to keep the balance the same. Now, that percentage was kind of placed upon us arbitrarily, because at that point we had already allowed thousands of Asians and Japanese, mm-hmm. Chinese and Jews, right. And so on. And so, being a compassionate people we are, when we realized that there was this effort to flood us with immigrants from third world countries, they passed the McCarran Act, which limited immigrants on a percentage basis based mm-hmm. upon the current population. If you're, all right, we've got them here already. We're not going to just run, deport them and let them come here legally. They've been here. But we're not going to let the numbers increase so they right. Overwhelm our white population.
Right.
Oh, excuse me. And so they kept that percentage averages in balance until 1965, when they passed a new immigration bill and signed into law by Lyndon Johnson. And then since that time, we've been flooded with aliens. We're not saying they're not good people. I mean, many of these people may be good people. We're not saying they're good people. It's just that they're not our people.
Right.
And they change our culture. They change what we as a people experience and express. And I'm not quite sure this is a good analogy, and it may be stepping into something I can't even, don't even have a good conclusion to it. But it'd be like, I suppose, in a simple way that everybody in your house are fans of the Green Bay Packers. You know, mm-hmm. and then you start letting people in who like the New York Yankees. Well, no, that's baseball. All right, some football team.
And LA Raiders.
Okay, and all of a sudden, LA Raiders taking over your Green Bay Packers. They're taking down your Green Bay Packers signs. They're taking down your pennants. And you say, wait a minute. This is Green Bay Packers' house. And they say, well, not anymore. Now, people would actually fight over that. But our whole country, our whole people would be displaced, and people like saying, oh, this don't make any difference. So,
well, it's, and I noticed a sign out, I'm not sure how long it's been there, but I noticed a new sign that I guess some of the churches in Harrison had put up here. Well, I don't know when they put it up. I'd never noticed it before. But it looked fairly new, maybe a month or a couple weeks old, but a great big sign that said, diversity is a code word for salvation.
I saw that. And, it's been up there a couple months.
Has it? Okay.
Yeah, I saw it eight weeks ago.
Are you kidding me? Diversity is, and they did, you know. Now I know they think they're being all cute because there's the diversity is a code word for white genocide.
But that does relate.
Before, right.
Diversity, code word for salvation. In other words, we're our eternal spirit is saved from hell. And we reach eternal salvation by embracing diversity.
Right.
So in other words, these people are anti. Actually, that's a statement against the blood atonement of Christ.
Yeah.
Because they say the blood atonement of Christ doesn't count. It's only we become a diverse community.
Right. Yeah.
It's insane. It doesn't make good logic.
No, it doesn't. But they're illogical because, you know, they want to talk about God's order. And they want to talk about, you know, the way that, you know, God set up his perfect earth and his perfect order and everything. And, you know, you can read right there in Genesis, kind after kind. And then they want to go and just totally erase the perimeters of God's design. They want to totally erase the boundaries that God placed into existence. They want to erase all of that and pollute everything that he created. And
right.
It's, you know, it all just, you know, to their mind, you know, pollution equals salvation. And, you know, we know that's contrary.
Right. And of course, when they talk diversity, they're making a reference to multicultural communities.
Right.
Now, if that's the case, then the most perfect heavenly communities would be like Pine Bluff and Little Rock and mm-hmm. Detroit and Chicago and places where the Baltimore, mm-hmm. there's a heavy dose of this multiracial
mm-hmm.
communities in existence. Those should be like the heavenly places to live.
Right.
And yet in reality, the place where people want to flee to are towns like Harrison
mm-hmm.
that are almost exclusively white and mm-hmm. safe and secure. And so anyway, the it's very illogical, but you can't deal with logic for people like that. They don't understand it, mm-hmm. and it's almost a waste of time trying to explain logic to people who are so illogical. I'm thinking we're going to kind of switch gears a little bit, but there's a reference in the Bible where it says part of the punishment for Israel, it's in Deuteronomy 28, part of the punishment for Israel, our people, would be so that your children shall be taken from you.
Mm-hmm.
They shall go into captivity. And you feel helpless mm-hmm. as you see them go into captivity. Then I think about a statement made by Jerry Rubin, who was a Jewish activist back in the 60s, and he spoke at a university in Ohio, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm.
And his opening remark was, "We have stolen the America's children." And, of course, that makes reference to all this the 60s generation mm-hmm. that got plunged into this hippie, multiracial, cultural...
cultural Marxism.
Right. Back in the 60s, which are now our leaders of our country,
right.
as well as their children now. Okay, all that now leads me to this movie that is out called... Excuse me, I'm gonna, people start talking about me like Hillary Clinton. Anyway... The
just don't throw up in your glass.
Did she do that?
Yeah. It was just about a week ago.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, she had the water glass and she was coughing, you know, and she was holding the water glass up and acting like she was taking little sips of water.
Uh-huh.
And they zoomed in on it and slowed it way, way down.
Yeah.
And you could see she wouldn't take any sips, and the last little deal, as she put it up to her mouth, she threw up in it. And you can see the vomit all going down into the glass.
Okay, now you got to give her some credit, because if she was able to pull that off that successfully, that's a real talent.
Yeah, that's what my husband was even saying. Like, they had to really slow it way down to catch that, so that was pretty, you know, sly on her part, but nevertheless... made me want to throw up.
Yeah. Well, that's why me personally can't make comment about her coughing, because I've had a coughing situation for years mm-hmm. and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never smoked or never did any illegal drugs or didn't do anything that would induce.
Right.
It's just something in my body. And I've been coughing. If people listen to me and notice that for mm-hmm. as long as you probably remember.
Yeah.
And so I can't make any comments about Hillary's coughing fits, because I sometimes get up. I'll let other people talk about that. But back to what I was saying about this movie.
Yeah.
And it's called Angry Birds.
Mm-hmm.
And we rented it last night and at the recommendation mm-hmm. of Shelby.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you got a chance to see it yet, Rich, mm-hmm. or you just got a report on it. Pardon?
Yeah, I watched
it. Okay. And... it really is. I don't know if the producers, I don't know if I don't understand how this slipped through, or if they just so brazen they don't think it matters, or if they don't make, if they can't make the connection,
mm-hmm.
or if there's somebody up there who really says, "Hey, I can slip this through and help educate mm-hmm. people." I don't know. It's really mm-hmm. amazing, because I recommend people watching this movie, because this is an excellent movie on white nationalist propaganda to fight against white genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie surrounds, and you watched it too, Rachel, so help me out here.
Mm-hmm.
The movie surrounds a little island of birds. Mm-hmm. And these birds are happy, and they have their little troubles, like any mm-hmm. society. Right. They have the police, and people get in trouble and all that sort of thing. So it's not like a heavily blissful island.
Right.
It's just an island of birds who are happy and have a very functioning society. And they got little baby birds with little eggs and so on.
Yeah.
And they go through all their affairs. They have birthday parties and we have everything. Okay.
Yeah.
And all these birds are here in this little island. They're all happy.
Mm-hmm.
And one day a ship comes into up to the island and there's two pigs on it. And the two little pigs get off, and they're friendly little pigs. They got big smiles mm-hmm. on them, and they just want to be part of. They want to come here and be,
mm-hmm.
be your friends.
Right.
And the one bird, though, he's suspicious of them,
mm-hmm.
And he's kind of looking at them like, well, what's, there's something not natural here.
Right.
You know, pigs don't naturally hang out with birds. There's something not natural
right.
here. And all of a sudden, he discovers there's more pigs. And the other people don't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of us, and at one point, he says, hey, I thought there was just two of you.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's shh, like, don't
point out.
Don't point out the obvious. And but before long, there's more pigs. All of a sudden, there's more pigs than you can count. They're everywhere. They're like taking over, and they're happy, and they're fun, and they're entertaining the people, and they got their own culture, and,
mm-hmm.
and everything. Just everybody's just wonderful. They just are so happy. All these pigs
mm-hmm.
that come to the island, and they all want to be happy, get along together. And this one bird said, "Wait, this is not right. Something's wrong." He sneaks up to the ship, and he realizes there's some nefarious scheme going on, and he tries to warn them. Nobody listens to him.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, one night, the pigs steal all the eggs, all the babies.
Yep.
They're all the children.
So
just like the Bible says, your children be taken into captivity. Or like Jerry Rubin said, we've stolen America's children.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, which is a reflection, a metaphor, what we see happening today.
Mm-hmm.
It happened with our young people, and been going on for a couple generations. Where young people have been stolen from our ancestors,
mm-hmm.
so to speak, who passed
right.
down a heritage, a culture from generation
mm-hmm.
to generation to generation. Suddenly now in the last 30, 40 years, the kids have been stolen into an environment, into a culture that is destructive to our white heritage
mm-hmm.
culture. And so in the movie, the pigs steal the eggs, take them back to their island where they're going to be genocided. They're going to eat them.
Yeah.
And suddenly the birds find out. And, of course, they recognize that they've been fooled. And then the one little bird who tried to warn them,
mm-hmm.
The angry bird. And I like this line here where they, first off, one bird says, well, I'm going to have more babies. And he said, no. He said, we're going to get our babies back. And then he says, "And you need to be angry."
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget the phrase. Maybe you remember, Rachel. But basically saying, you can't be Pollyannas. We're not going to be smiling. We're not going to be happy birds anymore. We're going to be angry birds. They
yeah.
stole our kids.
Right.
And then they mount their attempt, well, successfully.
Yeah. Get
their eggs back.
And destroy the other people's lives.
Yeah, and destroy them. So this is really a metaphor.
Yeah.
Of what has happened to our society, our wonderful country, we're being invaded. It might have been cute to have that first little Mexican family move into your neighborhood and open a little Mexican restaurant. Oh, good, we got Mexican food. We'll have to drive 40 miles. It might have been cute at that time and
yeah.
so on. It might be interesting seeing, talking to somebody from another culture. Oh, that's kind of cute the way you do that. But then suddenly when they keep coming and keep coming
mm-hmm.
and keep coming, it's not cute anymore.
Yeah.
And
I don't know. I hear people sometimes, they talk about diversity and how great it is. And it's like all they can think about is, oh, we've got Indian restaurants and we've got Thai restaurants and we've got Chinese restaurants and all these different restaurants. And
now, that's to me, that's diversity.
Yeah.
How many different places you can eat at.
Yeah. It's like, really? That's what you base your whole world outlook and view on, is how many different types of cuisine you can try? People are so short-sighted. But anyway, mentioning that that billboard, though, is right a mile or two past it is where we have our big White Pride radio billboard that advertises this program and our radio. And
a lot of the people listening to us now
right.
are listening because they saw that billboard.
Right, right. It's very, very, very popular. It's right on a main thoroughfare from the south up to Branson, Missouri, and then on to Kansas City and stuff like that. But a lot of people, white, Christian type, people and families go to Branson every year for vacations and stuff like that. It's a really big tourist area. But our billboard was, what do you say, vandalized? removed, stolen.
Vandalized, I guess, but it was stolen.
Yeah. Some planning went into it.
Yeah, because this is not, I spoke to the people who own the company that places the billboards up, and they said it's a very difficult thing, even for their experienced people, to take the billboard wrap down. You know, it says they got to do it in calm weather. It says it's not an easy thing to do, and it takes them maybe 45 minutes or so to take it down. Now, obviously, when a company is taking it down, they'll be more careful. Want to preserve things, you know, just like if you're going to steal a motor of a car, you just want to cut all the holes, clip, 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 and lift the motor up. Where if it's your car, you unscrew everything and do it more carefully. And so obviously somebody stealing a sign isn't going to be quite as careful, but it's still high up in the air. You need some type of a lift truck. What do they call those trucks that had the little cage go up to the air?
I don't know.
Bird basket up in the air or something.
Truck sounds good.
A what?
A lift truck.
Yeah. Or some tall ladders or something. Yeah.
Otherwise, and even then, it's got to be tall because the sign is actually, the base of the sign is down in a like a gully. And so it's not even on a flat surface.
Yeah. And how big, that's 20 feet tall?
Yeah.
So you're, and then it begins like 10, 15 feet up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So you need like a 40-foot ladder at least, I would say. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
To get to it.
It's pretty high up there.
But they did it sometime between Sunday night of September 4th.
Yeah.
With the last day of our conference.
Yeah.
Sunday night, and then the 5th was Monday, Labor Day, and then Tuesday morning the 6th. So sometime between the Sunday night, the 4th, to early Monday or Tuesday morning, the 6th. So sometime that Sunday night or Monday night or during the day of Monday, they got in there and stole that sign. And I understand, you know, we have, of course, the sign company is quite upset about it. And they have.
Plus, and they own, you know, a lot of sign companies lease the property and then they put the, you know, the billboard, you know, structures on them, which they likewise do, but this particular piece of property, the billboard company actually owns themselves.
Right.
Very upset about the trespassing, but yeah, they had to have got, you know, however it was that they got up there, cut all the ratchet straps that hold the wrap up there, and
those are thick, aren't they?
Yeah, they're.
They didn't go up there with some little pocket knife.
No,
I mean, I suppose if it's really, really, really sharp.
Right.
But those are thick ratchets. I mean, it takes a tool. They had to come prepared with a proper knife to cut it.
Prepared and clean.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
So the police have been notified, and a reward has been offered, and. To the capture or arrest conviction of the people or peoples. I don't know if that's the right word or not. But anyway, who has been involved in it. And, you know, we thought there may be a video. Maybe there is. I don't know of it. But the thing is that it's very possible they're going to get caught, even though they got away with it at this point. Because, first off, that's a big rap. Two, unless they drove off from Little Rock, scoot it up here, you know, snatch it and scoot it back to Little Rock. but even then, people, when they do stuff like that, they do like to brag. They like to show their friends and their buddies.
It didn't take, you know, right after it was initially put up, what, a year, year and a half ago or whatever, maybe even 2 years.
December of 2014.
It was vandalized within a few days, but just
and there's been other signs been vandalized. Anti-white is a cold word for anti-racism. Well, how does that sign say? Does that say that right? Anti-white is a cold word for anti-racist.
Yeah,
that was a billboard too that also got vandalized, and but people do like to they do things like that. Do like to boast and tell their friends and tell their buddies, and so, you know, those friends and buddies they tell about, they might want the reward money.
Well, it didn't take very long for the people in the area to get caught when they vandalize, whether it's, you know, whatever type of vandalism. There's not really that bad of a problem around here like you might have in some of your big cities. You know, there's no, nobody's out doing graffiti and stuff like that. But, yeah, they'll...
Well, the people that stole the sign, they're probably local, probably white. Probably are not going out committing vandalism every day of the week.
No.
They're outside of their political vandalism, probably just their day to day, they're probably good law abiding citizens, yeah. I suspect, you know, and because we are, you know, a nice, nice community. but they did feel the need to commit this vandalism upon a political statement that they disagreed with. And it's a shame. But I think there may be more of this in the works, Rachel, as Donald Trump campaign continues to grow, especially if he gets elected on November 8th. I think there's going to be a blowback from from so-called minorities.
Well, already, like around the country, there's, you know, people that's been putting out their Trump signs. Those are getting stolen, and Trump, you know, signs are being vandalized, and just, you know, that's just kind of really petty type stuff. But like you say, you know, if he's elected, that's, you know, there's so much hatred for white people among the so-called minorities, and they go through all the white privilege classes and you know, all the this, you know, talk and stuff in the universities and colleges, and, you know, basically just, you know, kind of like a boxer going into his ring and his manager's trying to hype him up and pep him up. You know, you can go do it. You can do it. You know, it's the same thing they're doing to, you know, all the so-called minorities is, you know, you can do it. You can take this country. You can run it. You can rule it. You can control it. You can beat those white people. Just go for it. Keep doing it. You can do it. And, and you have to do it because, you know, white people have been so unfair to you and
they don't deserve free speech, and they don't deserve a platform because they get a platform, they get free speech, they'll deny your rights, they'll take over and bring the heavy hand of white supremacy upon you again.
Right. And so yeah, they're really hyped up, and it's, you know, going to reach a boiling point and just boil over. And it's a dangerous situation for white people, and you know that's why we encourage, you know, white people to, you know, it's not that, you know, we're if there's a nice white city and laws were obeyed and you had the, you know, nice, you know, schools and white people were in charge, and you have your museums.
Kind of like Detroit was when I was growing up.
Yeah, you have your museums and your cultural venues and things like that. You know, but yeah, that would be nice, but that's not what's happening. And
so it isn't because the city is large.
Right.
That isn't the reason we're making those statements, because large cities do have a lot of benefits.
Right.
You know, All your major cities that you can think of, I hear people, I can talk experience how Detroit has changed. Mm-hmm. But I hear people talk about how growing up in Cleveland, how wonderful it was, how they loved Cleveland and so forth. Or Memphis, how they loved Memphis, how they loved Kansas City, St. Louis.
Right.
All these, you hear white people talk about, I just had just wonderful time growing up there in Cleveland, Ohio. It was just wonderful. We go to the park. And then it's changed. So these were people, white people, living in a large city who experienced and enjoyed the benefits of a large city. But they had their parks and the museums and the zoos and all those different things that they may have had in the city. So it isn't because the city is large that suddenly causes them to flee. Mm-hmm. It's because the occupants of the city changed.
Right. And, you know, and so... You know, maybe for older people that recognize that change, but there's a lot of young white families who maybe, you know, live in the outskirts, or live in gated communities, or maybe live in a white section of the city, and maybe they live in that section because their parents, you know, moved them there, moved them out, you know, because, you know, if time goes by, they white flight, they move a little bit further out, a little bit further out, a little bit further out. Maybe they just, you know... Now maybe the young white families live in the suburbs or something like that, and they're like, oh, well, we live in a nice white area of Memphis. You know, maybe they live in Bartlett, which is, you know, a suburb of Memphis, or maybe they live in a suburb of Chicago, or, you know, just places like that. They're like, oh, we live in a nice white area. But I mean, when you think about your nice white area,
is a bubble in a sewer.
Yeah. Right. That's not a safe place for families. No. It's not a safe place to raise children. Not only is it not safe right now, but you're putting them in danger in the future when that hatred for white people really, you know, we think we see hatred now, how they're, you know, killing cops and just the violence against white people and so forth. I mean, people think, you know, it's bad now. I mean, wait until they just have lost all restraint and there is no restraint on them.
Absolutely.
That's, you know, go back to the 1700s, you know, back in the Caribbean islands and so forth. The revolts there and the mass slaughter of white people and children and whole families and communities and things like that. I mean, that stuff's can happen again. And white people, even a lot of white nationalists, they just refuse to place themselves in a safe place. And
because the media so successfully convinced everybody,
mm-hmm,
that if you live in a country, you're a hick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to have a member years ago, and he always kind of referred to, yeah, well, you're down there in Arkansas watching turnips grow. You know,
mm-hmm,
he lived in a big city, and he kind of made fun of people in this, in rural areas, you know, mm-hmm, like they're just country hicks, you know, would walk around with us chewing on a blade of grass.
Yeah.
You know, I live in a more exciting place. You could just walk there watching turnips grow, you know, but that gets boring after a while.
Yeah.
You know, and so they've been able to successfully convince people that if you don't live in a city, the fast-paced life, as they call the fast-paced life,
mm-hmm,
we live in a rural area. We live in a very fast-paced life.
Mm-hmm.
That somehow you're just not with society. You're not progressive.
You're backwards. You're not, you know, you have no foresight. You're just, it's a mentality that people get. And, our line of thinking is, whatever you want to think, put your family in a safe place.
Right. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about this statement Hillary Clinton made in Nevada here about 10 days ago. She made a reference to Donald Trump and the whole campaign and the new alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
She said they used to call themselves racist. Now they call themselves racialist.
Mm-hmm.
They used to call themselves... what else?
White supremacists.
Yeah, now they call themselves alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one, too, but it doesn't matter. And, you know, the recognition of this is really kind of a big deal because there is a, whatever you want to call it, the phrase alt-right refers to just anybody in opposition to the progressive New World Order.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it does include some people who are actually part and parcel with the progressive New World mm-hmm. Order. It does include some people who, because, you know, the Knights and the vast majority of people in the called the white nationalist movement
mm-hmm.
recognize that the foundation of our society, the civilization, our whole culture is based upon the family.
Mm-hmm.
And, but there are some elements who don't seem to understand that. And,
mm-hmm.
they do have a limited platform within what is called the alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
But the Knights Party here, that's a kind of a new term.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how long that term will be around. It might be just, in other words,
a passing term.
Right. Might not be around very long. The Klan has been around for years and has established itself. The Knights Party, let me rephrase mm-hmm. that. Because there are some Klan groups that are somewhat of an embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
But the Knights Party has already been around for years. Probably in a good sense, the most progressive Klan organization in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Or
just even just white nationalist altogether.
Well, I meant to say that, not the most progressive Klan organization, but the most progressive white nationalist, most progressive alt-right organization in the country. They're, you know, because of the vision that we have in this movement, in establishing our base, our convention center or the church, our office space. We have actually a white nationalist alt-right retreat. That families can come to and be inspired for meetings and conferences and so forth. And there's no one like that in the entire country. Mm-hmm. And because of that, the media's attracted to us a lot. And we were the first ones to begin a radio broadcasting. We're, as far as I know, still, even to this day, the only one that has 24-hour. There may be some others, Rachel. I'm not sure. 24-hour broadcasting 7 days a week.
While a lot of people were still, you know, trying to figure out how to get websites up, we've been broadcasting white nationalist news video online, actual, you know, live broadcast for 18 years now.
Right.
And there's, I don't know of anybody that does that. They put some podcasts out and they'll, you know, make a video and put it on YouTube and stuff like that. But as far as like an actual live news broadcast, white nationalist viewpoints.
And now this is done 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. If you haven't, you go to White Pride TV. Right. We broadcast live two different programs. 5 days a week.
Yeah, and then go to altrighttv.com.
Alt-Right TV. At 7 o'clock, Monday through Friday, is the Wake Up America. It's more of a Bible-based, not into doctrine, but just realize that we have a right to be proud to be Christians. Right. And that's from 7 to 7:25. And then from 8:30 to 9 is White Resistance News, which is carries current news, not something happened 6 years ago, but current news.
Every news, what's happening
right now.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes it's news that you may see in the news, but it may be news that's happening that the national media doesn't want to even call attention to. Like those two homosexuals up in Chicago who sodomized children and then eventually committed suicide. Mm-hmm. I don't know that ever made the national news. It made some local news. Yeah. Certainly didn't get the high profile attention it needed.
One was a teacher, and he was taking kids on overnight trips and taking them to their home and getting them drunk and pornography and taking pictures. I mean, it's just a real,
take pictures of them while they're in the bathrooms?
Yeah, just a real disturbing.
I mean, just sick. These people are sick.
Disturbing story.
And then to think that, right now, the head of the San Francisco school district in San Francisco, obviously, California, mm-hmm. is now an open, admitted gay mm-hmm. man. Matt Haney, who is the president of the school board, he's advocating now, and I guess with a lot of support, to change the name of the George Washington High School, because he said it should be a name, our school should be named to somebody that can be, we can be proud of and inspire us.
Like Maya Angelou.
Right. And so this was what is happening. You know, we have been telling people for years, but he started going after the Confederate flag and Confederate symbols. I remember talking about this 25 years ago, Rachel. When they started going after the Confederate monuments, that's just a step. They're going to go after all our monuments, mm-hmm. even George Washington. And people literally laugh and say, mm-hmm. it'll never happen. He fathered our country, the first president, blah, blah, blah. You know, it'll never happen. And now it's happening. Mm-hmm. And
I remember I think it was a rally, and I think he may have held a press conference also down in England, Arkansas, because they were trying to ban students there from having the Confederate flag on T-shirts or their trucks or things like that. And you were mentioning at the time then to reporters and stuff that, you know, right now they're going after the Confederate flag, but pretty soon they'll be going after the American flag. And I was like, come on, you gotta be kidding me. And now, you know, the Ninth Circuit Court there out in the, on the West Coast is told that schools can ban the American flag on different days, Cinco de Mayo and other, you know, days throughout the year because it's offensive to Mexicans.
Right, and it's called disturbance in the school culture, they had banned it.
Right.
We had the Colin Kaepernick refusing to stand for the national anthem.
Yeah.
Okay, they say, well, that's just one guy. But the point is he's got support. Even the president, Obama, kind of said, well, it's his right to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is a slowly eroding, and people need to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. The attack is to take away any emblem, any symbol, any monument that causes us to help establish a white identity. And if it helps establish a white identity, then it's become a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they get into the minds of our kids, just like in that movie, stealing our kids from us. And they're not taking them from the standpoint of picking them up and carrying them off so you don't ever see them anymore. But they're stealing their minds, stealing their spirits,
mm-hmm.
and turning them into something that you can't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and you know, that's why it's so important that, you know, people, you know, understand what's happening in the schools. And, you know, if they can't homeschool their kids, they've got to be, like, really, really proactive with their kids, knowing what they're being taught. And, you know, not just knowing what they're being taught in school, but their kids need to be so well instructed and that it's just second nature. That you don't have to ask what they're learning in school. They're coming home and telling you, hey, they're having us do a coloring project on Martin Luther King Jr., you know, that communist black guy. You know, they should be telling you that when they come home from their first grade project. I mean, they should know this stuff. But, you know, part of that, you know, it's also teaching them the importance of this white Christian cause by, you know, coming to conferences and so forth. Like, you know, the one we just had over Labor Day weekend. Another one, you know, Pulaski, a festival coming up on October 22nd. The conference coming up the end of April, you know, 2017. And it was, you know, really great this past conference to see so many families there and kids and it was just, you know, fantastic there. We had a lot of great things happen at the conference. We had some promotions of some different people to district coordinator, Jay and Vicky down in Florida, who's been doing a tremendous job organizing Florida and branching out into Alabama and Georgia and so forth, really networking people together and so forth. And so there's just a lot of great people tonight, a lot of people that aren't members but are supporters who get behind the efforts. And when parents participate and when they get involved and when they watch our shows or when they listen to this or when they listen to, you know, White Pride Radio, they have gone during the day or they, you know, put on the shows that we have for kids and things like that. That's just all that type of stuff helps teach your children the importance of what this is, what this struggle is about, and it helps make them a part of it.
Yeah, they need children really need to be involved in what you're doing, not just like being taught, like, okay, kids, I'm going to teach you. They need to be involved because it's kind of like a child at 2 years old doesn't naturally love, in Arkansas here, the Arkansas Razorbacks.
Mm-hmm.
He don't naturally love the Green Bay Packers. He don't naturally love the New England Patriots.
Mm-hmm.
He loves those things because dad gets excited about it.
Right.
And he sees the excitement in dad. And dad said, we're going to go to a Razorbacks game. And the kid had no idea what that is. But he sees dad's excited, so he's excited.
Right.
And when he sees mom excited, mom's like Razor football too. And so they get excited about those things. Mm-hmm. You're excited. Why? Because dad's excited.
Right.
And that's why by the time he's 16, he's a devoted New England Patriots football fan.
Right.
Or he's a devoted Green Bay Packers fan. Why? Right. Because dad taught him the excitement of being a fan of the Green Bay Packers.
Right.
And the same thing with this movement. Moms and dads need to come to conferences. They need to show excitement. Be excited about the future of our people.
You have to create a culture within your family.
Absolutely. It has to be a culture. That's a good word for it. It has to be a culture. Everything in your family, in your home, has to envelop that. Yeah. And so, you know, hey, kids, we're going to sit down and listen to White Pride Radio.
Right.
Or we're going to sit down and you may want to watch Fox News. Have them sit and watch Fox News a little bit, you know, and watch the news, and you explain to them what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and what's happening. And or you can watch CNN if you want to. Explain from them what's going on.
Yeah.
But get them involved in watching, observing the news. Be excited about watching the news. Learn from it. Be able to interpret the news, interpret what's happening, interpret the statements.
The propaganda and the cartoons they're watching. You're
right.
You know?
So.
And then don't let them watch this. Some of that stuff alone, you know, because their whole minds are getting stolen.
Yeah.
I know there's a guy I was talking to, oh, it's been a year or so ago, and him and his wife, they've got several children, a couple sons, several daughters, and so forth. And they show up to things now and then, although not for, you know, quite a while and stuff. And you see them on Facebook and stuff. And anyway, had written me a few years ago, one of the, I think it was maybe the oldest daughter, I forget which, but she's 16, 17 years old, and the son was about 12, 13 years old, and he mentioned that, well, they're, you know, they've been teaching about Martin Luther King in you know, a couple of their classes. It was Black History Month, and really wasn't sure what to tell them because the kids were, like, asking some questions about it, and how it just, yeah, it really seemed like, you know, blacks had a really rough time, and, you know, white people were pretty unfair and kind of mean to them and stuff like that, and he wasn't really sure what to say to them, and I'm like, are you kidding me?
You've been a member of us that long? You're not reading?
You got a 17-year-old?
Aware?
And a 12 and 13-year-old? What have you been doing that they even have to stop and ask you a question about that?
That's right.
I mean, they should be on top of that, the kids, yeah. By that age, they should be able to come home and be like, you know what that freaking teacher was telling us? It's, can you believe the propaganda coming out of their mouths? Can you believe what's in this book?
A girl or a boy at 18 years old, he's only 3 years from in reasonable time,
yeah.
3 years from becoming a parent and a teacher himself.
Yeah.
And so, and again, it's not that, okay, kids, we're going to talk about politics now. It's just the Bible says, talk about these things when you get up in the morning, when you go for a walk, when you sit down to eat. In other words, it's part of your life, part of your culture. It is like, okay, we're going to have to talk.
Yeah.
You know, it's just part of what you're doing, demonstrating the things you love, the things you enjoy, the things you find pleasure in, the things mm-hmm. that you watch on TV, the kind of music you listen to, the kind of entertainment you seek, the kind of books you read, the kind of emblems you display on your wall. All those, the kind of friends you have,
mm-hmm.
the kinds of things you're allowed to talk about in your home,
mm-hmm.
All these things help just become.
It's got to be second nature.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like a child learning to talk.
Yeah.
You don't wait a child gets 4 years old and say, okay, we're learning to talk. The kids learn it without even realizing it. You don't even realize they're learning it.
Yeah.
And that's how this love for our people has to be. They have to just learn it just by total observation by everything you say and do.
Yeah. It's got to just be second nature. It's got to be like as easy as breathing, you know. And it's just, you know, it's I fail to understand sometimes how well-meaning parents who understand the cause and understand the importance, but yet somehow, you know, I mean, it's bad enough when you got liberal parents whose kids are being, minds are being stolen. But then when you have people who have open eyes and who allow their kids to be stolen, their minds to be stolen, to, you know, have them, you know, steer off the path, it kind of boggles my mind. And it, not only is it sad, but, you know, it makes me mad, too. Kind of like the old angry bird.
Yeah. You
know, it makes me mad. It's like, wake up, people. Come on. Yeah. You know, what have you been doing in your house? It's like, what have you been doing within the walls of your house that you've got kids and you've been aware of this message and this cause your whole life yourself, and then you've got kids who are being sucked into the enemy's propaganda? What? How lazy can you be? It's laziness.
Yeah.
Well,
I wanted to, in the same vein, Rachel, I want to mention that teaching children is not from a standpoint. In other words, if you think, I've told my kids they're bringing home a black person, that's not teaching.
No.
You know, teaching hatred towards or showing hatred towards minorities is not teaching. In fact, it's going to be counterproductive.
Right.
Because that's the kids going to see that hatred in your eyes and your anger in your eyes, and then they're going to hear the sad little stories in the schoolhouse.
Right.
And so it's got to be a love for your people, love for who you are.
Right.
And but if it's just based upon a hatred for the other people, then you've done yourself a disservice.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Because everything that they'll hear. Here's a perfect example here, is the little singing duo Fresh and Blue, the Gady Girls, Lynx and Lamb. They had a white nationalist band, beautiful, beautiful young girls, raised up white nationalism, very popular, put out a few CDs, they did the TV stint, sure, most people listening to this have probably heard of them, Fresh and Blue. But they had no Christian foundation, and the family itself was very focused on hate for other people rather than love for their own people and love of Christ and so forth. And now both of those girls are vehemently opposed to white nationalism, speak out against it.
By the time they get into 14, 15 years old, they
began distancing themselves.
Yeah.
And now that, they're probably 24, 25 years old now, and went on through high school and learned about the real world, how hateful white people really are. And then they saw that backed up within their own family of hate. And so it kind of made the enemy's propaganda even ring all the more true.
Yeah.
And, a talent they could have taken to use for our people. It wasn't focused on love. It wasn't focused on our people and no Christian foundation. And now they're just lost to the world.
Yeah, so that's why it's very important. And teaching children has nothing to do with teaching hate for blacks. I don't hate black people.
Right.
I don't hate black people. I feel have a compassion, if anything. I don't hate minorities. But my greater compassion, my greater love is for our people.
Right.
And I think that Donald Trump mentioned that in his speech, immigration speech. Mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty. Because I've never heard a politician ever say it before. We've said it. Mm-hmm. We've said it among ourselves numerous mm-hmm. times. Donald Trump mentioned about the illegal alien in this country. And he said, people feel sorry for them, have compassion upon them. The home could be, family could be broken up. But he said, what about compassion for our people, mm-hmm. our citizens?
Right.
And nobody stops and thinks about that.
Mm-hmm.
What about compassion for our kids? And so I have compassion. I don't think I'm a hateful person. I don't wish ill harm or mistreatment or misfortune to happen to somebody because he's not white.
Mm-hmm.
But my greater compassion and love is for our people. And right now, I see them facing genocide.
Mm-hmm.
And people think, well, that would never happen. But look at how our, especially if you're a little bit older, look at how our nation changed in your own lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Then consider the vast changes that are going to occur when the baby boomers start dying off. Just put those two pieces of the puzzle together.
Mm-hmm.
Then stop and think what America will be like in another 30 years. And if that doesn't create an alarm in your head, then something's wrong with you. So that's it. And these people say, well, I'm going to be dead and gone. I don't want to worry about it anymore. That really angers me.
Right.
Because, yeah, you'd be dead and gone. Great. What about your kids? Yeah. You know, and yet that happens. People think that way without even
selfish.
Thinking. Yeah. So, Rachel, we only got 5 minutes to go here.
I just want to remind everybody about the European American Heritage Festival coming up October 22nd in Clasper, Tennessee.
Oh, that's 70 miles south of Nashville.
Yeah.
So if you make a long trip of it, you can go to Nashville, incorporate that into your vacation if you want to.
And there's a lot of things to do around that area there also.
David Crockett lived that area as a young man. Had a
Crockett Park.
A grist mill, big park there.
Yeah, Southern Gospel Museum in the area.
It's not very far from the Battle of Shiloh.
Yeah, there's all different things.
In Athens, there. Alabama, the Space Museum.
Yeah.
50 miles away. Mm-hmm. So not to see in the area, but on Saturday, the 22nd of October, you need to forget about all those things and focus on your heritage and your people.
Right.
And be in Pulaski, Tennessee, October 22nd, all day long. And we have events down in the square. Then at night, we have a private meeting for a private venue. When we say a private meeting, doesn't mean you got to have a certain a passport or a certain membership certificate. It means it's just not on the square. It's in a private venue. That's what it means. Everybody's welcome to it. You don't have to be like a member of something or anything like that.
You know, people want to give us go back to the website, kkk.com, the contact information. People, want to reserve a space for a table if they've got, some sort of crafts or if they've got, a couple of years ago there's been people there that sell essential oils, and there's people there that have, rebel stuff. There's people there with, different informational booths, and had a couple people contact us, wants to have a table about solar power. They got some sort of solar power gadgets and stuff for living off the grid, just whatever, just contact us. Council of Conservative Citizens is going to be having a booth there this year. Got a letter from them yesterday.
Well, it's going to be great. And, we just want to come down there and just enjoy, take an opportunity. If black people be proud of who they are, and if Asians, Orientals can be proud of who they are, and if whether it be Japanese or Chinese or Filipino or
they're even telling queers to be proud.
Yeah, that's a real leap.
Yeah, that's not something to be proud of. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, then why can't we be proud of our heritage? Why,
right.
And white Christians, why can't we be proud
right.
of our heritage, who we are, and the great accomplishments our forefathers and foremothers have given to civilization, to advancement of our lives? We have a right to be proud of who we are. And so come down there, and we have flags available. If you have a flag, and bring it. Bring it to your southern flag. Bring a flag from one of your ancestral homelands. Maybe you're from Greece. Maybe you're from Russia. Maybe from England. Maybe from one of the Scandinavian countries. Maybe you're from Italy.
And it's usually about 2 o'clock that we have the Walk for White Pride.
Bring your flag. And bring your children. Definitely bring your children.
This isn't some sort of boot-stomping skinhead march. This is a solemn family walk for
we have pictures that
pride.
Don't we have pictures they can see? Where's that again?
At whiteheritagefestival.com.
And they see some pictures there and kind of get an idea of what it's about.
Yeah, go back to kkk.com and click on the banner there for the links to the festival website.
So anyway, that's October 22nd. Just sit down and really make a plan. Your children.
Bring your lawn chairs.
Bring your lawn chairs, absolutely. We're losing our country very quickly, but it's not over. We might be down, but we're not down and out. And we do believe that God has not forsaken our people. So if God has not forsaken us and our people, if we here tonight have not forsaken our people, I ask that you don't forsake your families. Don't forsake your children. You need me there October 22nd, Pulaski, Tennessee. 70 miles south of Nashville.
On the square.
Right out of, right downtown on the square. Don't need directions. Just down by the Giles County Courthouse. Downtown on the square. You don't need an address. Just downtown on the square. It's a beautiful city and a beautiful history. So, anything else, Rachel? All right. Well, that does wrap it up. So, until next time, this is Thomas Robb and Rachel Pendergraft reminding you to love your God and to love your people.